Are you or a loved one battling addiction? Relevance Behavioral Health is here to help you. At Relevance, you'll get intense clinical care coupled with long-term relapse prevention. Call today, 732-702-2242, or go online at relevancerecovery.com.
Hey guys, welcome to Speaking Recovery. I'm Bill Spadia here with my friend and co-host Daniel Regan. Good to see you, Daniel.
Good to see you, Bill. Thanks for having me again.
So, well, I'll tell you, I think what we've started here is fantastic. I hope you're enjoying this and getting something out of this as well. We talked about all the years that I've been working with Daniel and the Regan family and CFC Loud and Clear, the people that they have helped recover and the families they've helped. We thought, why don't we put this together in a podcast and get into the detail. You know, I only have so much time on the radio broadcast where I've got maybe 4 or 5 minutes, and then we tried to take some calls and we thought, you know what, this would be an extended format where you can interact with us and get the straight answers from Daniel. He's the expert. This is a man that not only recovered himself, but has successfully launched and run CFC Loud and Clear now into something that is huge, a new clinic in Monmouth County called Relevance Behavioral Health. We talked about it a little bit last week. So as we get started, Daniel, just explain what Relevance Behavioral Health is, the unique approach that you take to helping people beat addiction.
Absolutely. So I started on this journey with my story, and you know, I found myself in the wheels of the addiction treatment center, and just passed around to all these different centers and really got nothing out of it. And what I needed was very unique and uniform to my ideals as an individual. And that's what we really wanted to bring home. When I came back from treatment, we created CFC Loud and Clear to catch all those people leaving treatment and give them that individualized care. And what I've always dreamed to do is also give that in a clinical sense. And that's what we do at Relevance now, Behavioral Health.
From CFC, from your perspective, you literally have a 95% success rate, and that's going out over a couple of years. So The whole idea was, it's not about 28 days and then, hey, good luck, get out there. It's about sober living. It's about family support. So if you've got somebody who you know who's suffering from addiction, who's struggling with addiction, who maybe has already been to rehab 2-3 times, sometimes more than that, this is the place you want to go to get help. Now, today we thought we would change the conversation and talk about needs and the root cause of addiction. You hear this all the time, right? How many politicians want to just paint with the brush of a couple of talking points, go to a candlelight vigil, maybe throw some money at it? In New Jersey, they set up a hotline. I mean, I tell people, I'm like, there is a better way. But let's start at the beginning. We were talking off air about the hierarchy of needs. Explain that. What does it mean?
Absolutely. So one of the things that I wanted to do with this show is kind of bring some of the lessons that I teach over at CFC Loud and Clear and be able to give it to the masses. And I think it's important because these things start explaining answers, especially for families. You know, why did my child end up in addiction?
Yeah.
They had all this great characteristics of
sports, you know, school. They've got all the success. They've got the girlfriend, the boyfriend.
What happened? And usually a parent's or family's natural response to it is to blame themselves. They did something wrong, right? And that's not the case. It's not the case. So I use the hierarchy of needs as a teaching tool to kind of explain where addiction comes from.
So where's the hierarchy come from? Who came up with that? Can we see that?
Absolutely. So Maslow, Abraham Maslow,
okay,
in 1943, he was obsessed with trying to figure out what motivated individuals. Why would individuals do these great and terrible things? You know, this is right after World War II, or right before World War II, right after World War I. And all these different things. He wanted to explain, why is there Mother Teresa and Adolf Hitler? How does someone become that, right? So he started doing all these case studies of trying to figure out what made a human motivated. And he came up with this hierarchy of needs. And essentially, it's a pyramid. Right, and on this pyramid, the lower levels is physiological needs, and then it goes to safety needs, then it goes to love and belonging, then it goes to esteem, and then it goes to self-actualization. So these physiological needs are exactly what they say, right? They're food, water, those basic needs that you need in order to survive. If you don't have them, you're going to be motivated to get them.
So part of what you found is that, you know, people are filling a need with the addiction, whether it's alcohol, heroin, you know, cocaine, whatever they're using.
Essentially, what happens is that we have a natural progression as humans that we need to move up this chain of needs. And you can't get to the next need without fulfilling the one below it. So okay, I can't feel, I'm not interested in a romantic relationship if I'm not eating and drinking, right? I'm more focused on, I need to get some food in my stomach,
right?
So the way he set this up and the way he explains it is that you need to get to the next level. And you have this desire as a human, mm-hmm. it's our basic biological setup to want to progress, right? So what happens is that individuals get stuck at a certain level. Usually you find this at love and belonging or esteem needs, right? And what happens is these need blocks are essentially perspective, right? Okay. So when you're an 8-year-old kid, right? Love and belonging, right? How easy is it to make a best friend? It's very easy.
Easy.
I like the color red. You like the color red. You want to be my best friend, Bill?
Ah, life should be that simple, right? Exactly.
So, and it is that simple for a little bit. But as we grow, we make these prerequisites in our life, right? We need more to fulfill that need. And sometimes it's irrational.
Yeah.
It's not really possible to achieve that level, right? Or we might have some situations that are causing us that we can't even get the basic needs met in that level.
So people find a way and they get themselves in trouble.
Well, what happens is you have an undying need to fulfill that need, right?
Right.
So you're uncomfortable. And that uncomfortability causes pain and it causes trauma, right? And trauma is the root of all addiction. Mm-hmm. And that trauma affects you greatly to the point where you need to find a comfy blanket.
Got it.
Now, we all find a comfy blanket, and we all experience this at some point in our lives, right? And we're going up and down this hierarchy of needs because one day we might have it, and then we get in an argument with our spouse, mm-hmm. right? And then all of a sudden, love and belonging is at jeopardy again, right? So we're always kind of going up and down this chain, and these situations of life affect us. We find different comfy blankets, right? It might be chocolate. Jelly beans, shopping. It might be just isolating yourself in your house for a couple weeks, whatever it might be. Some people find substances.
Got it.
Right? And that's where we find that we synthetically fulfill this need. So when someone is dealing with, say, love and belonging, mm-hmm. right, and they find heroin, heroin creates a sense of well-being for them. It creates a sense of belonging to them. For me, drugs were a sense of belonging. It gave me it fulfilled my need to make friends.
Did you know you were in it when you were in it? Were you conscious of it, that maybe I shouldn't be doing this? This could be harming me, but man, it feels good.
No. No, you really don't. I think you get blinded by it, and mm-hmm. it's because you feel good and you feel satisfied, you naturally already create irrational rationalizations to continue on. And then when it gets really heavy, yes, you realize what's going on, but now you're physiologically done.
So you need help. Let's see. We've got some questions coming up. Kurt Lang has a question. Isn't more a weakness? Kurt, to be honest, I'm not sure what your question means, so maybe you can write another comment and explain that more. But let's go to Wayne Wilson. Why will a methadone clinic accept Medicaid while refusing private insurance? And he also said methadone patients must travel to a clinic every single day while Suboxone patients receive a prescription for a month of medication. Is that something you can – I mean, I don't even know where to begin on that, but it seems to me that people are frustrated that the system itself is not catering to the actual needs that people have.
Yes. This is the red tape of the system. It is extremely difficult to open up a methadone center, and there's a lot of regulations around methadone. A lot of it has to do with the substance itself, because while Suboxone has an opioid antagonist attached to it, which means that it's an opioid. You're getting an opioid in your system, but it blocks opiates from entering those receptors. Okay. While methadone is just a straight opiate.
Does that work? I mean, in your opinion, I mean, you've gone from a recovery group, a nonprofit recovery group that works on support and family support and sober living, to now an actual behavioral health clinic. Do things like this work? You hear about methadone, you hear about Suboxone. I'm ignorant to it. I don't know what they're even supposed to do. Do those things work? Because we hear time and again that they don't. That people, you know, these methadone clinics, that you're really just supplanting one drug for the next and you're not actually solving the problem.
It's a harm reduction model. And I think, okay, and we were talking about this a little bit earlier before we started the show. And, you know, we have to look at it as not everybody is ready to go down an abstinence-based track. Right, and what we have done is kind of created a way for them to sustain a relatively safe way to continue a usage of something, so they're not having those urges and cravings, mm-hmm, and keeping them safe, so that there's less probability that they're going to overdose, and that they could be productive. They're not, you know, running out to a drug dealer every day and those kind of things. Do I think methadone and Suboxone are the greatest MAT medications to use? No, I don't. I think methadone is definitely an antiquated, mm-hmm, medically assisted treatment. Suboxone is definitely a newer. Obviously, you could see that just with the opioid antagonists attached to it, sublingual tablets. Things have changed about it that made it a better medication. And I think 10 years from now, there's going to be even better ones.
So, Daniel, let me ask you, you know, looking at the people that are tuning in right now and watching this, and people that will then hear this podcast when we drop it on our site, it'll be available not only on Google Play and iTunes, but you can go to nj1015.com/BillSpadia. Find out all you need to know about Relevance Behavioral Health. Listen to our conversation. You can go back and hear the first episode. Now, this is a second. We're going to keep this going as long as this is a crisis in New Jersey. And it is 3 times the national average when it comes to overdose deaths. So for the folks that are tuning in right now, whether live or on the podcast, what do you say when you get a call from a mom? Says, I need help. I've got a 22-year-old son addicted, you know, stealing out of my purse and, you know, gone sometimes days on end, comes back and in and out of reality. What's the first thing that you do? And what do you want to say for those moms that are listening right now?
Well, first, I would tell you to find a support system for yourself. I usually tell those parents to come in and talk with me in person, and we have a family session to really figure out what dynamic is going on and how we can help their son. It's important for us to really come together and band together and create healthy boundaries for our family so that we're able to positively push them into the right pathway, mm-hmm, essentially. And we need the whole family on board. So that's how we start that process to eventually get to an intervention level.
Now, you and I have talked about this. You know, we've got Joshua Poppy has a question about, it's not a disease, it's a choice. And you and I have talked about this. Like, there's been a trend in, at least in popular culture, to say it's a disease, not a choice. And then others will say, whether you accept that premise or not, there are choices that lead up to getting into this situation. And unlike cancer, let's say, mm-hmm, you can choose following a path to get yourself back out of it. Mm-hmm. But how do you address like that question? Is it black and white, one side or the other? Or is there something in the middle between, you know, your addiction being a disease at the, mm-hmm, same time, you having the power, you can think your way through this and get out of it?
Mm-hmm. My opinion individually is that addiction is not a disease. If I had to describe it in medical terms, it is a medical issue. There's no doubt about that. There is a psychological issue, and we're talking about that with the hierarchy needs, right?
Right.
It's trauma based, and whether you're eating too much chocolate, going shopping that with money you don't have, gambling, right, whatever it is, there's a psychological trauma that has happened that needs to be fixed, mm-hmm, in order to relieve this. So, but as a disease, no, I don't believe it's a disease. If I had to put a medical term to it, I call it an infection, right? We get this wound, right, okay, that's caused by a traumatic event, right? Yeah. And we decide to ignore it. And instead, we just go, oh, that's not there. And we, right, distract ourselves with whatever behavior substance, mm-hmm, we decide, mm-hmm, to use, and that becomes infected, and it becomes infected and becomes infected, and it festers, right? And that causes us to use more because we're in pain from this wound that's festering. Now, it's my job as a treatment center to go, hey, you got a big wound on your arm and it's festering. Right. Let's take care of that. Do you see it? Yeah? Right. Okay, let's take care of it. And then we get you in and we start cleaning that out.
How many people that come to you see the wound? Do they get it? Do you find a lot of people that they come in and are they looking to place blame? Is that a part of it? Do we start blaming?
That's a defense. I mean, that goes for anybody. Right. That goes for anybody. You know, whether you're a politician or walking down the street, we all have the defense mechanism.
Easy to blame somebody else.
Yeah, right. And when you're in so much pain, I mean, if you're in pain, you're not feeling well. Are you a good person to hang around that day?
No, probably not.
Right? You're probably short and snappy and everything. Well, that's what you're dealing with.
I've had moods sometimes even on the radio where people are like, God, I wish he didn't show up at work today.
Right. Exactly. So at first, they go through the defense mechanisms, but then they go, I realize, I have this giant wound in my arm. I need to do something about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what the whole intervention process is about. And then where CFC picks up, now we have a cleaned out wound from treatment, right? Now, CFC is all about maintaining that wound so it can fully heal.
How much would you say that this culture we have, because it seems so much worse now than it's ever been, and it seems to be only getting worse, yet you've got all the politicians paying attention. We've got a candlelight vigil. It seems that happens every single week in every town across the country. But it's getting worse. How much do you think coping skills at a very young age would help? Like, we have this, and I'm not trying to oversimplify the everybody wins and everybody gets a trophy, but like, you've got kids that are taught not to understand how to lose and suffer when they're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. And I can't help but think that translates once you hit your 20s and you're like, oh my God, the real world is really hard.
There's a lot. And again, I'm going to go back to a hierarchy of needs now, that love and belonging, that esteem needs. When you're not really achieving anything, how can you build esteem?
Can we put that back up?
When you're not finding the love and belonging, because if you don't get 500 likes on one of your pictures on Instagram, how are you ever going to fulfill love and belonging, right? I never belong, right? And I feel like this is where our society has really been interrupted. And we all want to get to that self-actualization, which means you fulfilled esteem, social safety, physiological needs, and you go, hey, I learned all these awesome lessons and I made it here, okay? Mm-hmm. Now let me put this all together and actualize it into something else.
So when we look at this, physiological needs, safety needs, social needs, esteem needs, self-actualization, how many people get there? Is this something that it's like, high school football players that make the NFL? Or is it, no, most of us can actually get there and get there comfortably, and we're just not focused on it.
We usually get distracted. We get distracted by the curveballs of life, and we end up trying to fulfill another need. The self-actualization, it's not a static thing that we achieve. It's something that we constantly have to work on. Mm-hmm. And we can constantly work on. We might have moments of greatness. I'm sure you've felt those moments of greatness, like, wow, I achieved my dream or what my goal that I set out to do. Right. And then goals change and you had something else to achieve, right? And then we have this, he actually built a whole nother level to it. That's transcendence, that you realize that achieving and everything, it's actually utterly meaningless. I don't actually need anything except for basic
needs. So that's
needs.
The actualization. You're like, okay.
And then you start serving
really
others.
Need all that stuff. And then, so Loretta Caselli actually had a great comment. She wanted to thank you for the analogy, addiction as an infection and not a disease. That's a brilliant way to put it. I agree with Loretta's comment on that. But Loretta Caselli's asking, how do you help a niece or nephew when family ties have been totally broken? I mean, that's a great point, right? So you're not really close to your sister or your brother. They've got a family. You know the kid needs help. How do you even start that?
Sometimes it takes a leap of faith. And what I mean by that is sometimes you just have to put all those differences to a side and walk right in, even with the knowing that it might cause an adverse reaction by the family issues that are going on. But, showing that you love unconditionally is very strong.
How aggressive, Daniel, have you, in your experience, seen that people need to get? You know, I've talked with your mom, Lynn, about this. Like, sometimes you got to change the locks. I mean, that's something that is horrific to most people. Like, that doesn't even make sense. I mean, this is the, you know, it's like you're chasing that love. You love your kids so much it hurts, and it hurts to see them hurt. Where is that line cross?
Well, the fact is that parents will love their kids to death. And I mean that by they'll, if we make it easy for them to continue with a lifestyle that's not conducive and positive, right, to moving forward, essentially we're just loving our kids to death. So, I mean, it gets to extremes that we have to put if they're completely resistant and they don't want to move forward or they're not accepting help, most oftentimes the reason why they don't accept it is because they think they have a plan B. And the plan B is always like manipulating mom into letting me back in the house tomorrow. Or, you know, Aunt Jo or whoever it is, they think that they have a plan B or family member usually that they can manipulate to get.
So to Loretta's point, you know, a niece or nephew, what would you recommend her first call be? I mean, does she call the mom and dad? Does she talk to the addicted kid directly or call you guys?
I would say call us and then we can kind of listen to the whole entire picture, get the big picture of what's going on. And then I'd be able to better give you advice on which route we should take.
So what's the phone number? So Loretta, we're going to give you a phone number right now that you can call.
It's 732-702-2242.
So I'm going to also put that on the link. So this will be posted to nj1015.com/BillSpadia later today. We'll write a quick thing. I'm going to take some of your comments into consideration as we roll this out. And, you know, and we want to hear from you. And you can actually, there's a form that will be at the end of the post where if you need help or you need us to get in touch with you or Daniel and his team to get in touch, there's a way for you to submit your information. And of course, no one's going to see that but Daniel and his team. So obviously, I know a lot of you are hesitant to put your comments up because I'm looking at your name with regard to Facebook. But look, it is what it is. You can, as far as we're concerned, this is about getting people the help that they need and breaking through the stigma of addiction, breaking through the silence of addiction, breaking through the misinformation of addiction. There's so much misinformation out there. And there are people who have not only struggled and suffered, but in Daniel's case, survived and won. And I told the story last time. I'll just tell it quickly. When I first met Daniel and his mom, Lynn, and they came on the radio, and I was in that old mindset of what you hear with Alcoholics Anonymous, that it's a day-by-day thing. We're counting the days, and it's a day-by-day fight. And they both looked at me like I was crazy, and you guys got annoyed. Like, no. You can win, and people need to understand that you can win. And unfortunately, in our culture today, there isn't that message. That message has not gotten out that you can actually beat this thing.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge problem in our society. We always focus on the negative rather than the positive, and we're looking to change that. And we have been successfully, I think, putting out a message of hope for
absolutely
5 years now. 5 years.
So, 5 years.
Yeah,
wow.
Something like that.
It's amazing, right?
Half a decade.
Yeah. It's a lot. Well, time goes fast, and I'm not getting any younger. And the reality is that we can solve this. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that. That's why we work together well. All right. So Jerry Hook has a question. How do you know if you're dealing with a patient broker versus an advocate who really cares? It's an interesting thought, kind of commenting on the profitability that's in these clinics, et cetera, but it's a good point. What's a great sign of someone who legitimately cares about solving the problem versus somebody that is just racking up the dollars and churning and burning people in and out of rehab?
Do your due diligence as a family. Really look into the different treatment centers. A recovery advocate shouldn't have a bias towards a treatment center. They should be giving you options and doing more of a clinical assessment, assessing, you know, your loved one or you as an individual, what ideals you have and what treatment program would really fit you. If they're biased to, hey, this is the greatest place and it cures everybody, that's a falsified statement. So and you have to do your own due diligence. And that's what I would suggest.
Let's talk about a quick, somebody brought up sober living, right? So let's talk about sober living. How does that message get across? And how is what's the most difficult part of the journey? Is it breaking the addiction? Is it keeping away from the addiction? Is it finding the replacement, which you can put into a positive thing? Some people find faith. Some people find other activities. Some people find, you know, marriage and kids. Where's the hardest part? Are they all hard?
Well, you got a bunch of different mountains to climb for sure. What I'd say to really sum it up is 1% of the problem is getting off the drugs. 99% of the problem is expanding your window of tolerance as an individual, right? Expanding that ability to really cope with life on life terms. For whatever reason, your window of tolerance has disappeared.
Yeah.
So we're working on that expansion.
How long have you been out of that mess? How long have you been sober and focused?
Coming up, I'm 9.5 years.
9.5 years, right? A decade. It's possible to win. It's possible to beat it. There's a lot of different levels, but you definitely have to be focused and you've got to want the help. And if you're a family member that has someone who's struggling with addiction, these are the folks you want to call. You want to get in touch with Daniel Regan. You want to get in touch with Relevance Behavioral Health. The website is healingus.org, and the phone number again, Daniel?
732-702-2242.
I'll put that in the post today. I want to thank my friend and co-host Daniel Regan, not just for joining me on this podcast. We will be back every first Wednesday of the month here live on Facebook. You can always download and subscribe on iTunes and Google Play. All the information is there, and on nj1015.com/BillSpadia. There'll be a post about this later on today. It's going to be up for the month until we get to the next one. And there's a form there. If you need help, fill that form out. We're going to get that information directly to Daniel and his team. So thanks, all of you, for joining us. Thank you for all your questions. We appreciate it. Good luck. God bless. We're praying for you. And remember, action is what gets a solution. You have to act. You can't just sit back and wait for something to happen. Go and make something happen. This is your best resource, healingus.org. Thanks.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.
Subscribe to the new Speaking Recovery podcast, available at nj1015.com/BillSpadia, Google Play, and iTunes. Hosted by me and my friend Daniel Regan from Healing Us Centers. Are you or a loved one battling addiction? Relevance Behavioral Health is here to help. At Relevance, you'll get intense clinical care coupled with long-term relapse prevention. Relevance is the only local care facility focused on recovery and long-term sober living. Call today, 732-702-2242, or visit them online at relevance.com. RelevanceRecovery.com.